Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast.
Okay, here we are, Automate and Grow, episode 9, and I'm here today with founder Ethan Slotkin from Squad Cierge. And Squad Cierge is an early stage venture out of Silicon Beach in Los Angeles area, which is a burgeoning tech community where we're seeing a lot of activity. And we reached out to Ethan because we wanted to learn a little bit about Squad Cierge and what is happening in this tech startup in particular. So Ethan, thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, Michael, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No problem. So on Automate and Grow, I think I mentioned before the call that we usually talk to founders or experts in really two areas. One is how they're solving problems using a digital product. And I think that's probably very applicable to Squad Cierge at the stage that you're at. And then we also talk to them, you know, when they're ready to start marketing and selling, about how they're either applying technology or tactics. So thanks for joining us today. I think you're a little earlier than some of our other guests, which is kind of interesting. It gives us a little bit more insight into things. So
we're hoping to just shake it up for you guys a little bit. That's the goal.
Great. So tell me a little bit about Squad Cierge and where you guys are at and what some of your goals are.
Sure. Yeah. So we've been working on this, tackling this problem for about 18 months at this point. It's really simple what it is that we do. We're fighting the social media and online current that's been going on for a long while, and to help people, busy people, see more of their friends, family, people they love, dates, etc., in person. And the main mechanism for doing that is eating and drinking together.
Okay.
And
great.
That's how we're trying to do that. So ironically, it's technology. It's in the form of an app. But the fact is that's where people's heads are, and to be able to capture them, you need to go there and make them aware of, and make it easy for them to manage this. You know, our demographic is busy, busy professionals, myself included. I have my head in my phone more than I'd like, and to make it easy for those folks in fun and positive to spend more time in person with people they like without it being a burden.
So I think that's a theme. You know, you're kind of echoing a theme that we hear a lot now, which is that people are very stuck in this digital world, and a lot of them are actually tuning out. You know, if you read I see actually on LinkedIn yesterday, for example, there was kind of a chorus of my contacts that were talking about how they've dumped certain social media platforms and they're kind of done with them. And was this like what was the inspiration for this? Was this like your idea? Was it born out of like a lifestyle problem that you had, or where did it come from?
Interesting foundation. It didn't come from where you might expect, and it might shed some light on what it's like is with tackling a problem and going after it. The original problem that we had was, I have small businesses in my family, and the small businesses are captive from a marketing standpoint to a limited number of marketing options that they have. Marketing options who have business models that are misaligned and poorly designed, let alone other flaws with their systems from a consumer standpoint. So when we originally went about this, we wanted to provide an alternative to small businesses to help them thrive. I mean, these are the faces of America, a lot of times immigrants and otherwise, people working hard to provide their product, and no good solution to be able to get word out to get more customers who might love their product through the door. So our initial foundation and problem does not look exactly like what it is now. What we came to realize was we need to make something incredible for users so that they're engaged constantly. And so we made the adjustment and focused this all about the user to create something that they'll just love and make sure that everything that's in here adds to their life and makes it easier for them to have more fun in groups, decide where to go together, have a great experience.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you started with an initial problem, and it sounds like you had kind of bootstrapped the initial investigation and then maybe development around that problem.
That's correct.
And what you're describing it as was, this is a platform for, you know, smaller businesses to bring in people and attract them to their business. So that's interesting.
That's right. And product market fit at the end of the day is important, right? And in our case, there's two sides of the platform. There's the businesses and there's the users, the people. You need to have something on here that's fantastic for both of them. So it was inevitable that we would have to solve that regardless. But we realized, you know, that we had a technology-based way to create something compelling for users while not having to go out to the businesses directly. And so we focus this all on the users and making this the best thing possible to just create an oasis for these people, a fun oasis for the people who are working so hard and have their heads down all day, every day, and allow them to get out and have more time, good quality time with the people they love. And, you know, you've heard this echoed, you're right, in LinkedIn, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg said something very similar, you know, which was around time well spent. It's a theme. And, you know, you've also heard the sound bites about people getting upset or having emotional effects by being in social media. Everyone's kind of portraying this image of what their life is, which is only a snippet of reality.
Right.
And it's affecting people as well. So, you know, from a timing standpoint, the need for something like this does feel like we've kind of hit that point. Yeah.
It's funny you said that, because ironically, yesterday I'd reposted a post on our Instagram, which goes to all our other feeds, and it was side by side showing different people in different jobs and their real life profile versus their LinkedIn profile. So it's kind of like you say, like you've got almost an avatar of yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
And it sounds like what you're trying to do is use the technology to bridge it back into the real world where people are connecting again.
You could almost call us something like social unmedia.
Oh, really? Okay.
Social less media, I guess you would say. And that's where we're trying to head is less time there, more time in person.
And how far into your, investigation of the problem did you make that switch? Because it sounds like you refocused the product maybe. And I don't know if that was before you started developing or was like kind of midstream, or how far into it did you?
Let's go back in time for a second. So if we started this about 18 months ago, I would say about 8 or so months into that, we realized that this was all about the users and creating something excellent for the users, partly because we uncovered there was another way to go about this from the business standpoint as well and make it compelling for the users. And so at that point, it was just primary and secondary market research to determine, you know, what the hot buttons were for users. What is it that they're looking for? What is it that they're missing right now in this world? And that's how we designed it. So, you know, we kind of used that as the framework and foundation for how we were going to construct this. You know, that's when it turns from science, primary research, secondary research, numbers, data, a little bit to art, which is actually a little bit uncomfortable because you're somehow having to distill these things that are amorphous. It's almost like this mental Partworth analysis that has to take place. And then, oh yeah, you need to somehow tie it into the UI so it's harmonious as well. It's not an easy exercise. I'm confident we do not have it correct currently. And we'll have to learn over time how we need to improve, but that's what data is for, right? Is in data insights are for. But
it doesn't sound like you actually built like an initial product and then went out and found that the feedback was bad. It sounds like you made this decision before you started development, or
I think that's correct. You know, that said, we have had some adjustments along the way, even as we developed this product, and you know, I am the ultimate bad cop on my team of, you know, saying, hey, I think we need to adjust this. Here's what the market's saying and nuance that we need to account for. So we've had a couple of times where we made adjustments. And so, you know, a good lesson there. I built product before in other businesses and otherwise, but a good lesson to be had that I even still didn't get 100% right is you can take the prototype stage a lot further, the design and prototype stage a lot further, and not enter tech land until you're completely solid. In our case, we did that pretty well, but there was still opportunity to do that even better, in my opinion.
A number of years back when I started, I was building everyone's product. So I was originally building everyone's iPhone, Android app with custom backends. And I think the one thing that I kept advocating is what you just said. And it's really interesting you say that, because we would advocate almost paper models. So it was like, and I don't know if you did anything like that. I'm curious about what your process was to get to the conclusion that this, like, what sort of research did you do before you put pen to paper or started designing UI, or maybe you already designed UI and you just got feedback? I'm kind of curious how that went.
Yeah. The initial foundation was, you know, we kind of used the baseline of what's out there in the world that we play in and said to people, okay, guys, you know, what's wrong? What's missing? What is it that you want? What do we need to have if we were to build something that would help you in your life? So we used that as the foundation, and then after we had enough of that information, combining that with some secondary data insights, we said, okay, we have enough of the foundation to take a crack at this thing, which we did. So at that point, go ahead.
So did you profile the people you wanted to talk to, and then you went out and actually, when you say research, you actually, okay. And how many people would that entail? Was it like a big group or?
We had our target demographic identified from a frequency standpoint of who would want to use something like this. Pretty intuitive, right? Who uses any food or food-related kind of apps with frequency? Pretty clear. Pretty clear in terms of who's more frequent, less frequent, et cetera. And then, yeah, I'm all about sample size. So we went out and did primary research with hundreds of people.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
To do the secondary research from a variety of sources. And we keep several of those primary research folks attached to our business as an almost ongoing focus group to get constant feedback. And so once you get that and codify it, you know, we could put it into something, and we put it into designs, and we started implementing. The modification I might have made was put it into designs and prototype, get feedback maybe at that point first on the UI, maybe put some pages on a wall and have people tape them, write on them, et cetera. We didn't do that. We went right into build and handed it to them. I think regardless, you'll still need to go into it's a full product and have them play with it, because it's a lot different playing with something than just seeing images on a wall. But that's what we did. And so they started to play with it. General feedback, unsurprisingly, was, yeah, this is cool. Yeah, I need this, but I want this, and I want this, and this needs to change. And, you know, that's what we've spent the last 10 weeks or so doing, I would say.
Interesting.
Upgrading based on the actual tangible, you know, user-based feedback that we have.
That's great. I mean, I think that's always a bit of a challenge, right? Because a lot of the app projects that you see out there, it's as a friend of mine said, you know, startups can be like a dictatorship, right? And usually you're getting feedback from here and people that are around you that are, you know, validating your hypothesis. But it sounds like you took a very robust approach and went out to figure this out. And then what was your approach then once you kind of said, hey, this is the right approach? What was your development process like? Because I think a lot of people, like, you know, they look at apps and they just go, oh, it's easy, it's simple. That's the first thing that as an app developer you hear, which is, that's simple. And so I'm just kind of curious what your process was, and did you build an internal team, an external team? Like, how did you approach it?
I mean, it's probably worth calling out also that I'm not the purely technical guy.
Sure.
I am probably all things but tech in our case. And so the very first thing that I need to do on my side was get technical folks attached to the business, specifically a CTO.
Oh, great.
So I actually brought on two co-founders, technical co-founders, who have experience from different perspectives to be able to create the architecture for this thing, build out the team to be able to execute on it, look at it from a detailed product angle as well. Two kind of complementary personalities that I brought in as co-founders attached to this. That created the foundation of this, which helped with not just architecture and product, but also hiring and making sure that we had, you know, checks and balances in the system. So that was the start. And then, you know, we brought on several folks who we can call the heavy lifters, who do more of the active coding on this.
Okay.
And they've been with us for a long time at this point. They're fantastic. They are core to our team. Could not have gotten to where we've gotten to without them. These are brilliant folks. But, you know, to your point, it's still iterative. And so there is still definitely not a dictatorship in our case. Did listen to the market. But you have to have an initial thesis anyway. And once you have the thesis, you do, you know, you take it out to the market to at least guide them. You can't have infinite scope.
You gotta make a choice.
Exactly. Give them a choice and have them guide you, and then get kind of iterative feedback is how we approached it.
And then are all of your team here in LA, or do you have some that are in other markets, or how did you build the team, like, geographically?
So there's five of us core to our team. My two technical co-founders, head of marketing, and a designer that we have.
Oh, great.
Core to our team.
Okay.
And then we have four folks who are outside the country who have been our heavy lifters. You know, we pay them hourly, and they've just been excellent for us. Always on, always responsive. They've been core to us for months and months. So
that's terrific. And then, so it's always interesting, because I think, you know, one of the themes that we get to experience and talk about here on the show is this trend towards either outsourcing or people being outsourced, right? So there's like a freelance trend even in the market, but also then leveraging resources outside of the market. Was it your co-founders did they have a prior relationship with those resources, or when they were building a remote team, like, how did they put it together?
I mean, what's so exciting and interesting about the world now is, if I've been an entrepreneur, you know, and created successful businesses a few times over in different areas. But if you go back 5 years even, if you had a problem or an idea that you've identified as a business person with a technology component, which practically every business has,
right,
the ability to operationalize that was practically zero. You had to either go to coding school, get somebody as a potential co-founder who hopefully had the expertise. That was kind of it. Now in the current world, we're lucky because there are platforms like the Upworks, the Work Markets, right, those kind of places of the world to be able to get talent. So then the only question is how do you vet? How tight is your vetting process and right, in your other internal processes? In our case, it did help that I have, you know, my CTO and my CPO attached to it. Equally, there was a strategy component to it too, which is pragmatically, we believe in having a little bit of redundancy too. You know, things come up where people have to leave, they get sick, things happen. So we need to make sure that we have a bit of redundancy and duplication in terms of the skill sets, so we don't have a gap in what it is we're doing, you know, to the best of our ability, of course. So definitely it's something we thought about. But as a startup too, you know, you have a budget and right, you have to perform on a finite budget. Yep. And so, you know, you can't take full-scale salaried workers who'd come from the U.S. who are commanding $300,000-$400,000 a year. It's just not going to fly.
There's such a limited resource here, and not necessarily better resource than other markets, right? Like, it's been my experience. I think there's just cultural differences. Yes. It's interesting to hear you say that. I think I echo what you're saying, which is, it is an exciting time, right? Like, you're, to your point, you're not the technical co-founder, but you have an idea and you can focus on the product and you can still get it done.
Yeah, it winds up being a win-win for everybody, which is our team is just outstanding. They're incredible workers, incredible teammates. They're just amazing.
That's awesome.
And they get some awesome work to work on something that's cool. They get a flexible schedule. We have a lot of fun together is what it is. And we get people who are fantastic, you know, loyal to what we're doing, thoughtful, provide diversity because, you know, what we're doing is not just intended for the U.S. market, but beyond as well. It really creates a lot of richness in what we're doing. So it helps us a lot.
And sounds like, the way you describe it, it sounds like you actually, despite having external teammates but despite having them remote, you seems like you have a culture. That's kind of what you're describing, that, you know, you have, you can tell me otherwise, but it sounds like that you've tried to foster that just by what you've described.
One of the first things I did before I even hired the CTO or the CPO or anybody was I sat down with a little bit of introspection and said, what is it that I stand for, I believe in, this business therefore has to believe in, and therefore are explicit hiring criteria that we need to have as part of this business. Yeah. And I almost envision when we have a bigger office down the line and we're scaled out and everything, what are the values that are going to go on our wall is kind of what I pictured. And I hired around that.
Wow. You know?
And so
okay.
An example of that is, I'm a New Yorker by background, a little bit more assertive, you might say. So punctuality, responsiveness, you know, things like that, which of course everybody values, but I'm a little bit more high-strung wired in that way. I know it's crucial to me. I know it allows me to work well, and it rolled like that. So everybody on our team is like that. We just all operate like that. And it's not to say that any other way is wrong. There's a great other way to work for a lot of people. For us, that's not what works. And so that's just an example, but there's plenty of other things that are examples too. You know, we want our people to be not just doers. We want them to be thoughtful, which is probably
it's
not
tough
surprising
with developers a lot of time, right? Like you,
yes.
Usually they're, you know, some, I shouldn't say usually, but you're kind of either there doing their job,
yeah,
but they're
right,
not necessarily feeling or understanding the product, right? So it sounds like you've kind of have a bit of both.
We encourage our whole team always, and this is not just one directional, this is in every direction. We're constantly sharing, you know, products from competitors, products that aren't from competitors, but that have interesting UI features or other elements. We're constantly scanning that, and that's ingrained in who we are. We spend a lot of our time doing that, and it becomes a really rich conversation when everybody has their eyeballs on that and is raising the tide for everybody to make sure that we're all kind of rising together. So.
Oh, that's amazing. So, yeah, where are you guys at? Like, are you preparing for a launch? Are you coming out with an alpha? At what stage are you in, and what are you anticipating out of that that change?
It's funny. It depends on how you define it. About 10 weeks ago, we released our private beta to the aforementioned focus group to be able to test. That was a product, full product. And they gave that feedback. We've been upgrading since. At this point, while that's been upgrading in the background or being upgraded in the background, we also got our marketing going as well. So this is to, you know, to our other point, which is you know, content marketing, social media marketing, and our other marketing assets are very crucial as well for reach purposes. So there's something ironic about the fact that we're trying to pull people off of social media to get more in touch in person.
And but the fact is
that people are in social media. Yeah. So you have to go to where they are for awareness. I mean, the top of the funnel is awareness. We need to go there. And so that's been an interesting exercise, but we've been drumming that up. Our content marketing is moving well. Our website, we just put up our launch website recently that really tells the story of who we are and why, you know, why and how we're going to help people and affect people's lives daily. And our product, you know, is in final testing right now, heavy testing.
Oh, great.
So it will be released in February. We're in February now, I guess. Yeah. This month
today.
For full use. And this is this is the full product that's intended to help people's lives daily. So we're right there.
Wow. So you've got a platform. You've been out kind of testing and getting feedback and making changes. Sounds like your marketing is kicking in where you're pre – and it's a two-sided marketplace, as they call it, right? It sounds like
you could say that.
Or does it matter? Maybe is it just users that you're trying to get?
It's just users. We have all the data and content on here to make excellent recommendations. It's users. It's all the users.
Okay. So there's no – and then is there still going to be an element for the business or the restaurant at some point, or is that kind of like a future product?
That's correct, but it's only going to be in win-win format. So what they're going to be doing is providing offers, fantastic offers to users to compel them to come in, not things that are – detrimental to the UI that are going to affect the user standpoint. This is intended to be a win-win for everybody is really what it's intended to be, but that's not right now.
Oh, that's really interesting. And then as far as actually, by the way, I was told I'd say it's everything's interesting. So I'm actually interested, but
I'm also flattered.
So I think it's curious to, you know, it sounds like you've got a very, definitive launch coming up. What has been the marketing effort? It's been like social content. What sort of is that really around the restaurants, and or is it more around the functionality? Or
we're fun. We're a fun brand. We are. You work all the time. We are your oasis from that. And so we need to make sure that our content is engaging. It's about food. It's about new places. It's about things like that. But there's also this balance between, you know, hyper-local targeting and broad-scale marketing, broad-scale targeting as well. And so, you know, right now the content has to be wide enough that it's grabbable for anybody, whether it's food, whether it's, you know, quotes, whether it's things like that. That's kind of been our approach. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of variety that we put in there based on, you know, when it's going out to engage people on different days. There's an updated relevance on a daily, on a weekly basis to make sure that it's current. There are current events, relevant topics that are being brought up as well.
Got it.
That's how we've approached it, yeah.
Interesting. So now, sounds like, and you had mentioned this, that you had initially bootstrapped it and then just recently have taken on investment. What was that process like? Like, I know it's always probably emotionally challenging when it's your money and you're spending. You're probably very particular about it. But then you've got to switch to trying to, you know, get other people on it. So I'm just kind of curious what that process was like and how you landed as far as you know, bringing in outside investors.
Yeah, so I have a bit of maybe a longer answer here that also talks about a bit of context.
Okay.
But you know, we started down the road about 18 months ago. About 12 months ago, we went out to the capital markets for the first time. Now, I created businesses in the past. In fact, I had at least one business that had investors behind it, but not in this way, not exactly in this style. And so, you know, I like building business, capital markets, and how to approach that. There's rules. There's decorum and etiquette that exists in that market, and expectations that exist about how you behave.
Okay.
And God knows that, you know, I probably stubbed my toe several times.
Okay.
you know, it's untold. You could read as much as you want. It's untold. And so we went out to the capital markets about 12 months ago. We had a little bit of interest, but, you know, generally speaking, we ran into a bit of a wall. And that was because of a couple things, in my opinion. It's partially because of what I just said, that I take the blame myself. It's partially there's a macroeconomic dynamic that's going on where I think early stage investors, it seems like they've gone into either one of two camps. They've either had a lot of success and pushed down the curve more towards A round, B round, et cetera, or they didn't have success and they clammed up. They probably realized they need to de-risk their
So there's a little burn element.
Further,
Got
which
it.
Makes complete sense. I would do the exact same thing.
Interesting.
If I were in that case as well. And so we saw some of that. You know, as we progressed, what I said as a reaction to that was, okay, well, that's fine. I need to put my money where my mouth is and make sure that we're de-risking this enough to make this an investable vehicle for investors, right?
Wow, okay.
So we did that. And so I put in, you know, a good bit of my capital and got us to the current point, which is, you know, we have a product that's built, we have marketing that's humming, people reacting, wait lists sitting there, et cetera. We have proof of concept that exists. And fortunately, the markets have reacted in that way. And they understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, the strategy behind it, the technology, the product. And we've gotten the good reaction. So point is it not always a glamorous road, to be really honest with
you. No, it's like a bloody road, right?
Bloody road. It makes it a lot sweeter when you get there, and just constant learning to be had along the way. You know, I can imagine what investors are thinking as well. They're constantly getting hit up and messaged for, you know, check my thing out. And there's a lot of noise that's out there too, and they need to make sure that there's a great angle for them, and that relates to the product, the business plan, also the team, of course. We need to make sure that we're explaining that and communicating that in the correct way. And then also there's a people element that exists. It's myself, it's my team. We're going to have to work closely with our investors for a long time.
So and what do you think really those investors were investing in? Like, what was your differentiator in what sounds like a very noisy market for money and for backing? What was that thing that clicked through to them?
Well, first off, I think with any investor, they have to be able to identify with the product and the problem that exists. That helps a whole lot. And so we had a lot of positive reaction to that because practically anybody can use what we built, right?
Great.
In our case, though, I think it was really two things that probably popped. Number one, other than, you know, the problem we were solving, the approach and everything, we were built for scalability. We were built to reach everywhere in the world and attack a problem that exists everywhere in the world. So our scale potential is wide. And then two, it's our team. They have to believe that we have the background to be able to, you know, to have the experience building businesses, but also execute on this appropriately. And when we run into a wall, then we're going to figure out how to get around the wall. And, you know, in our case, several of these conversations we've had going for a while at this point, and they've seen the fact that we haven't fallen. You know, and in our case, we would have fallen by now if we were going to fall. We've hit so many walls and so many pivots that had to happen that we would have fallen if it were to happen by now.
Well, I want to be conscious of your time, but is there any advice that you have for anyone out there that's thinking, hey, I'm thinking of a problem and I want to solve it using, let's call it an app or a SaaS platform, or maybe it's content. Like, what would your number one takeaway be from all this 18 roads of MBA?
Overestimate your time horizon and your budget. Be hyper conservative with it, because the fact of the matter is that things always go wrong, and you're going to push because that's what we as business people are more than anything. And you have to have buffer and reality and groundedness in the plan that you have. Things are going to go wrong. It's just a question of what.
So no safe spaces.
Nope. Not that I've found at least.
It doesn't work in this. Nope. In the reality of the world. That's great advice. So I want to thank you for joining me, and I'm going to wrap up with two questions that I usually ask. And the first one is, how are you changing the world?
Me personally, or the business?
You can say either.
Let's talk about our business more.
Okay. Our team.
You know, and it's, frankly, this is where all my effort is going anyway.
Sure.
We want people, the focus on how we spend our lives has gotten a little bit out of whack because of social media, because of us working hard, long hours, commutes in the case of Los Angeles, a lot of things. We can't fix everything. We know that we can't fix everything. But what we can do is place emphasis and make it easy to spend more time with the people that you love, friends, family, coworkers that you really enjoy spending, whoever it is that you enjoy spending time with. Nobody's ever on their deathbed saying, I wish I worked more. But the problem is most people don't pull back to realize that on a daily basis. We're here to help them actually achieve that easily.
That's amazing. And then the final question that we'll wrap on, and I probably gave you a little bit of a prelude, so I'm not springing on you as much as most people is. Sure. We ask interesting guests to refer other interesting guests that you think should appear on the Automate and Grow show. So I'd like you, and usually their first answer is the best answer. So we're obviously looking for experts or entrepreneurs. And so I'm curious who you think that we should talk to and who you would be willing to introduce us to.
Yeah, so one of the people who's kind of watched us and been attached to what we're doing is a gentleman in Santa Monica by the name of Brian McMahon.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard that name before. Have you heard?
I have not, but that doesn't mean anything.
Okay. Well, he's seen a lot of businesses come through. He has a space out here that's intended to help businesses, a variety of angles.
Oh,
he's
great.
Seen a lot of businesses come through from you know, technology businesses, and other startups. He's seen a lot, and he's got a pretty good pulse on what's going on. Plus, he's a pretty fun and interesting guy.
Oh, awesome.
He also has side comment. He also does have a podcast of his own.
That's he does.
Of course.
Oh, great.
But it's worth having that conversation. He's a fun guy and has a lot of context as well.
Okay, so Brian McMahon.
Yes.
You have been nominated to appear on an episode of Automate and Grow. So we're going to hold Ethan to that, and we're going to get an introduction, and we would love to have you on.
It's like the ALS challenge for the entrepreneur.
Yeah, the ice bucket challenge.
The ice bucket challenge.
I forgot about that. That was something I was putting out of my memory. Great cause. I think everybody's tired of seeing it, but hopefully not. People aren't tired of seeing this. So.
It's better than the Tide Pod challenge.
Oh my God, what is that all about? Are people actually eating Tide Pods? Is this?
That's correct.
Is this a thing?
That is a thing.
I thought this was like a joke. I can't believe people are actually doing this.
I think it's real.
Okay, well, don't do that.
I will not.
Ethan, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and appreciate being on the show. And this has been episode 9 of Automate and Grow. And we're looking forward to episode 10, which will be very shortly.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
No problem. Anytime.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz and get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.